All right now, for all you cool cats, all you arrow twirlers with an eye on the X, we have a special evening for you. Guided by Wilderness Archery's own John Scar and Elliot Peters, it's Archery After Hours, where the bow rests and the night continues.
Blast this thing and
let's go.
Okay, everybody, good night.
Jeez, what's going on, buddy?
You think this would be easier to do by now?
It's not that hard. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
Well, once again, coming to you live from deep within the bowels of the Wilderness Archery compound.
You're lying at your house. There you go. Show them your wall hanger doodads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got my three yard mark on
X10s in there or something.
Yeah, because I can afford X10s.
Well, how did you do that though? Did you didn't stab those into the drywall, right?
No.
How did you do it?
I slid it into the. Here, I'll show you. So it's so tight in there. I don't want to mess it up. You see the edge of the frame there?
Yeah.
So I slid it on the top edge.
Man.
And then, yeah. Yeah, I did some finagling, man.
Wow. Yep. Sure did.
Anything for the cost.
Not bad, though. I like that poster.
I know. I got yours right there.
Yes, sir.
Awesome, buddy. Happening? Oh, man. I mean, life's changing a lot right now, but it's all good. You know, getting ready for indoor season. We got a D-Zone opener this weekend. So getting ready for that.
Rifle season.
Yeah. So that guy that is walking out with a orange vest and an orange hat is going to walk out on Saturday and smoke your target buck that you've been looking at on your cameras all year.
Mm-hmm. Dude, have I showed you I got like two target bucks, but I got one in particular.
I feel like you did.
I probably did at the shop last time I was there.
I think so. I think so. I've seen so many people's target bucks from working in the shop. Like, oh, I get this guy on camera all the time. You know, everyone's got a target buck. And I get it. We all do. But it's like, I've seen so many target bucks from customers and talking to people hunting and stuff that like I can't even remember who this is.
No, I get that. I've never this is like the first year I think I've ever had a, I don't want to say target buck, but like a buck that I've got prior relations with. Feel me? I ran into this guy last year in archery season and he just showed up. Well, he showed up this year in archery season, but the other one, there's a wide sucker, and I got like two videos of him in velvet last year, and then out of nowhere, he showed up like a week ago, hard horned one time. I'm like, oh my God, there he is. He's got a very distinct frame, and he's a massive body. He's the biggest deer on the hill, I think. But it's cool to finally, I've been hunting, you know, the Sierras for my whole life, but like, it's cool to finally have like a reputation. Like, I'm not even mad. Like, as long as some other dickhead doesn't shoot one of these deer this year, like if it goes till next year and we push this off another season, then I'm fine with it, dude. The anticipation of like finding these guys a third year and seeing how they've come and like knowing their patterns a little more now is like so much damn fun.
Yeah, once you get a little, what, like you have a spot and you go out and you're kind of putting the time and energy into that area, and you know, I definitely have a spot up north, and like I know exactly how to hunt it and what I'm going to do each day I go out there. You know, I might change my game plan from day to day based upon what's going on, but you know, I do have a baseline that I can always go back to. And so, you know, having that experience and that knowledge and the lay of the land to start learning how, you know, these deer move across it and what you can expect, and it definitely makes it easier. And that's something that I struggled with last year, being in a completely new area. I do think someone stole my buck after considering long conversations with family, you know, like my brother who was there and stuff like that. Like,
did you hit one or something? What do you mean?
Yeah, I stoned. So last year was like day three. It was the day before elk opener. And
you're talking about in Idaho.
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus. So,
okay. Copy.
Yeah. Roger. I wasn't trying to give too much information away.
Well, I mean, geez Louise. I was confused. Like, where the hell are you hunting where you run into the elk opener? In D zone.
Yeah. Not in D zone. Maybe yeah, if I was hunting A zone.
I got you.
But yeah, it was the day before elk opener and we got some snow the day before. And we were actually, no, it was the day after elk opener. Yeah. Because day one was good. Day two is when we got blasted with snow. So anyways, there's a light dusting on the ground left and I'm coming off the mountain for the day. And it was a really, you know, with the Swarovskis and, you know, the Night Force optics and stuff, you can see on the snow, you can see the deer really well. And so I saw kind of, you know, that on top of the snow. And I was just like,
I kind of remember this now.
That's not a stump. Mm-hmm. Stumps don't have giant holes in them.
Yeah.
And I got into my spot and I laid there for like 5 minutes, maybe less, you know, it was a while though. And I couldn't see his head, but I could see like two forks just like that kind of behind this tree like this. And I was like, if those move, I can definitively tell for certain that that's a buck. And so they finally moved. And when they moved, because he was looking up the hill at me, or actually my brother down the road, he was looking at him. But I was kind of off, you know, a little ways. So he finally stopped caring about my brother. And
he knew you guys were there.
Yeah. Yeah. My brother came down the road kind of loud, you know, just being himself. And like by road,
I'm loud or flying on a four wheeler.
So we were coming off the mountain. We were coming down to the four wheeler. So when I say road, it's not a road, it's the main path in. Yeah. And so he's young, you know, and I love my brother to death. Nothing wrong there. He was kind of giving up on the fact that today we're hunting. You know what yeah. I mean? It's been a long
been
day.
Been there.
And so, but I see this stump that has a hole in it. And I'm like, that's not what stumps look like. That's a deer. And I got in some brush and got all set up. And finally, those forks moved. And when he turned his head, his back rack came into view. Because his rack, from my angle, he was looking up the hill like this. So I could only see his front forks like this. So when he turned his head forward, all this came into his right side, came into view from behind the tree. And he was just a monster. It's an absolute monster.
Cue target panic.
Yes. Cue target panic. Cue the buck fever.
Yeah, you should have shot him when he thought he was small.
I know. I know. I've killed my fair share of forkies.
Yeah.
But a big guy, that's the second time I've been on a big deer and made poor decisions in the moment. Boom.
Bro, dude.
I remember you said, yeah, I was like, I've never gotten buck fever. And you're like, if that's true, I'm not shooting with you anymore. And
my dude, like I know nerves, like in a shoot off, you get nerves, you know?
Yeah.
But my buck fever nerves are like ninja style shit. I won't know for a month that like something will click and I'll be like, why the hell was I thinking to do that? And they'll be like, I wasn't even thinking straight. I had buck fever and I didn't even know it. My first deer that I ever shot was like, I remember thinking about this years later and going, what were you doing? I had a forked horn looking at me straight on and he was like 100 yards. And I'm sighted in like as long time ago, you know, inch high at 100 yards or whatever like that get you to wherever. Can you hear my chair squeaking?
I can, but
hopefully nobody else
will.
Anyway, Anyway, this buck is looking at me straight on at like 100 yards. And I'm like, oh, I'm an inch high at 100. I got to aim higher, right? Why would you think that? If anything, I should, if anything at all, an inch, maybe a little lower.
Yeah.
But no, I wasn't thinking correctly. I'm like, oh, I got to aim higher. And I remember aiming between his ears above his head and just being like, that's good. And shooting, I missed him two or three times and he ran away unscathed, obviously. But it wasn't for years later where I'm like, holy shit, I was not even my normal thinking self. That's how bad the buck fever was. If that don't make sense, made sense in the moment. And it's happened other times, and it's terrifying because I don't know when it's coming.
Anyways, yeah, I told you about ghost buck in my spot where I've been hunting for years, and I've seen this buck every year, and he usually likes to sit out on this crest, 800 yards off in the distance.
That sounds
cool. And it's super badass where he likes to hang out. It's a sheer cliff, and there's just like this nice little patch of green, and you can see it from like 750, 850 out.
Oh my God,
but that's the only spot. It's only, and then right below that, you can see, you know, the border of the Canucks and everything, and the fog rolling up the mountains.
Yeah. Dude, you want to know
softly, softly in the distance, you hear a wolf howl.
Dude, can I show you something real quick? This is so freaking random. This podcast, folks, has no direction or plan. I went on ChatGPT the other day because I finally learned about technology a little bit. And
it's becoming our best friends.
I was just like, so you can do anything on this stuff, right? So I said, you're going to laugh because most people don't use ChatGPT like this, but I said, can you create a picture? I asked very politely. I'm still new to this. I think there's somebody on the other end that I have to be super nice to, and they always nail it. So I'm like, thank you. I'm like saying stuff like thanks and oh, you killed it. But it's just a damn computer, you know? But I said, can you create a picture of a sagebrush covered hillside with antler tips of a mule deer covered in velvet poking just above the sage? I mean, like, what a dream scenario that sounds like, right? Like,
yeah,
the most beautiful thing. And I will be damned if it didn't kick out this image, right? Shit, that's terrible. God, I hope that works out. The color's bad, but...
Oh, I think I saw this photo.
Yes, I posted it, like, on my story or whatever. Dude, it absolutely nailed it. I mean, I would have made it a little bit wider and a little bit more typical mule deer looking, but I mean, it's exactly like I saw that. I'm all, oh, look at that velvet buck out in the sage. I mean, I've seen it in person and that stuff just gets me jacked up. And this thing can just create my fantasy, apparently, with a couple quick prompts. It's insane.
I'll use it at the shop, and there's something I want to tell you about in a moment. Mm-hmm. About arrow calculation in ChatGPT. So remind me if I forget. I'll use it at the shop, and Matt will be like, why are you saying please and thank you to the computer? And I'm like, dude, if this thing ends up ruling the world, I want it to remember that I was always nice to it.
Yep. That's not a bad way to honestly treat it. Be like, hey, GPT, you remember me? Like, hell blind guy.
My coworker goes,
sends you a Christmas card every year. That was me, you know?
Which wishes you happy Hanukkah and happy computer day, you know?
I should ask it. When's your birthday? Keep going.
Right now. So my coworker told me by being polite to it and being nice and saying things like thank you and can you please do it and like being all proper like that, it actually makes it harder for it to do its job. Because because it has to weed through your
polite bullshit
to get to the task at hand. So some of what you say sometimes can
Makes so much sense.
Yeah, like being nice and saying like, please, can you design this and da da da. It's like, wait, is he asking me to design? Because it's programmed to be told what to do, not talked to. Even though there's guys making girlfriends out of them now. So
talk about getting getting through a 10-day hunt a little easier.
Yeah, for real.
ChatGPT just told me, I don't have a birthday. I'm a software, not a person. Just a little reminder when you're being too polite, weirdo. Stop saying thank you, weird bastard. It says, though, if you want to celebrate ChatGPT, it launched on November 30th, 2020. So remind me to tell it happy birthday in a couple of months, just in case it does take over the world, like you said. Anyway, let's get back on track. Where the hell did that go?
Back on track. My buck was stolen.
Thievery,
I'm pretty sure, because we came back the next day and I told you there's blood everywhere and tracked it for, and then it just was gone. No sign of where it went or anything.
Alien abductions. Remember that? When they were cutting up cows with lasers in the 90s?
Yeah.
Could be.
Making crop circles.
Probably not.
No. But there's no drag marks or anything from like a bear or any sign that.
Starting to look more like the aliens.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was a big old blood pool and no blood leaving out.
Footprints, tire tracks.
Yeah. There was a lot of footprints, but so many. It was kind of in a pretty.
Why didn't you find it? How did somebody else find it first? It didn't die within eyesight, I take it.
No, yeah.
How long did it run?
I mean, between all the zigzagging, like, I think I calculated it, like, 800 or 1,000 yards.
Okay.
I've never, like, by the crow fly, like, 300 yards. And,
by the crow fly.
Yeah, but with all the back and forth that it did, yeah.
I'm tracking.
It definitely thought it was still being shot at. I'll put it that way.
Were you still winging lead?
No.
Was it zigging and zagging and you're just.
I hit him. He jumped and he took off.
How far was your shot?
So this is one of those things. Like we're talking about, you know, buck fever and whatnot, making bad decisions. I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, I'm sighted in at 100. I ranged. I couldn't get, you know. Shaking my hand, so I'm sitting there trying to range him, and I'm getting a 35, 190, 300, 45. You know, like I'm getting all these wacky numbers. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go
average.
Towards the tree that's in front of him that's, you know, not moving. Smart. And so I ranged the tree that I thought was right in front of him, and the tree was at 190, 200.
Chip shot.
And for some. And so I'm sitting
there. You're not dialing MOA or anything. You're not giving it a big rip on the scope or something, probably.
No, not a big
rip. Hopefully not.
With that night force, I do know how many clicks it is at 200.
What, one?
No, I think mine. No, mine. Yeah, like one MOA.
Four clicks?
Four clicks, yeah.
Yeah,
four or five clicks.
I mean, you're adjusting for like an inch and a half.
I know.
Yeah, buck fever. Doesn't make your
buck
brain
fever,
work well.
Right?
Yeah, I got you.
So
like
the
having
perception.
Having CWD for a minute in your own brain.
Yeah, or CTE, you mean?
Aw, too dark.
Just like the spots in my brain.
Way too dark.
I'm going to bring it back around to something brighter. I thought for sure. That's where he was standing. And it was like 190. I gave it those clicks and I put it medium high on the body. Like medium middle of the body.
There you go.
Like
if this is
his body, right? And there's the middle.
Yep. I know what
middle
is.
You know, here's the middle. I put it like right there. I gave it like 60%. High on the body.
You are way overthinking a 200 yard shot. You should have been like crosshair, hair, rip it.
Yeah.
But
going
again,
back, that is
buck fever,
yeah.
Something else.
I'm overthinking it, and then so I get down to where I hit him.
Rain man in it over there for no reason.
That buck was only at like 100 yards. The trees
still
that I thought
been fine.
Yeah, I definitely hit him high though.
Well, you hit it, so
yeah. There's blood everywhere.
Yeah.
And trying to find them. And I just, there's footprints all over the, you know, deer and human footprints. And I just think he got, you know, another hunter picked him up on the way out because he was a big boy.
How fast would that have had to happen?
I left him overnight.
Oh.
So came up on the way to the driving up to the spot in the morning, to where we get out and go in at, we saw some deer and some bucks. So we spent like 30 minutes, maybe a little bit more, getting after it on those deer, for my brother. Gotcha. And, it could have been longer. For all I know, it could have been 45 minutes, you know, not checking my phone out there. And, you know, go spend the day looking for it and whatnot, and never found him. So definitely know he's dead out there, if not mounted on someone's wall.
Somebody ate him.
Yeah. Hopefully not the coyotes.
Speaking of eating meat.
Yeah, let's hear it. I'm excited.
Shout out to Adam Knapp at the Country Butcher in Yuba County, up here where I'm at. And he gave me a box of bear brats and bear burger. I cut the roast out myself. Normally I process all my own stuff. And he heard me saying, he's like, you're not going to run this thing through a KitchenAid grinder. And I was like, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And you know what? That little damn KitchenAid grinder works pretty good. I can run
it. Works good for me.
No, it does. It works great. There's way better options. Way better options. But I have this one. And it does work. It's just a little more tedious. Anyway, he goes, dude, just bring me all your grind. I can run it through my grinder in literally a minute and hand it right back to you in the tub you bring it in. Let me do that for you. He's like, I got to pay to have fat hauled out of here. It's nothing for me to throw some, mix some fat, do all the ratios or whatever. And anyway, so I was asking him about pork fat, beef fat on like the brats and burger and this and that. And he's like, dude, let me just do this. Let me just handle this for you. And I let him, and he friggin' nailed it. I cannot decide what I like more, the brats or the burger. But I made one of the best smash burgers I've ever had on the Blackstone the other night. And the damn brats, dude, I've been cooking up a bunch of bell peppers from the garden and onion and just throwing a couple of brats in and having it for lunch. It's so freaking good. I'm so beyond pleased with that bear. I'm like sold on the bear thing, dude. Like, and I have a fair amount. I got like 50 pounds of this stuff out in the shop. And I'm like, it's everything I can do not to eat it every night. It's so good.
Yeah. I love bear. A lot of people don't like it. I really like it.
I don't know what, I mean, I get it. Like, I got lucky, right? My bear, do we even talk about that thing other than that I killed one? I didn't explain that, like, I saw it die. I shot it with a bow a couple weeks ago at 40 yards or 38-ish. It ran less than 40 yards and died within a minute. That freaking 2-inch beast broadhead zipped through him so fast that I thought I missed. And he went and died peacefully. It was as nice of a archery kill as you could ask for. And I'm like, oh, there he is right there dying. I see him. No, there's no guessing. There's no looking, trailing, nothing. Anybody could have freaking trailed this thing. There was blood everywhere, which I was worried about because I've never shot a bear. And I heard that, you know, sometimes they can be hard because of the coat and everything. And it's hard to find blood, but not a thing this evening. Anyway, I got over there. It was getting dark real quick. I took my pictures as fast as I could, and I got to cutting on him. And I think I had the hide off of that bear within 40 minutes of him passing. And it was 70 degrees out probably when it happened. And it was only getting cooler as the night went on. And so that bear never had a chance to sit and get heat soaked. As I came across fat, I was discarding fat into a separate bag because I wanted to take some home. And I rendered two big ass mason jars of bear fat into tallow. You know, I've been cooking with it. I plan to make some bar soap with it, just screw around with it just to have. It's freaking nice stuff, man. It's awesome. So the fat I was cutting off as the meat, you know, as I was cutting the meat up or getting him quartered anyway. Anyway, so it was the best case scenario. It's not like I found him midday. It's 90 degrees. I found him 4 hours later in the manzanita or something, you know, like where bears tend to spoil. Or I've always been told, get the hide off him and cool that meat down as quick as you can. And I think this is about as quick as I possibly could have done it. So maybe next time it won't be as lucky. Who knows? But it is some of the best damn meat I've had in a while. I'm beyond pleased. And I have a lot of it.
Yeah. You know, the original settlers, they preferred bear meat over deer meat. and they only kill deer for their pelts, and that's why it's called a buck.
You told me this last time. Yeah, that's a neat little story. I thought
so. Yeah.
Another thing settlers like to have was beaver tail. Have you had beaver tail?
No, you didn't share any with me.
We'll have to do that again. We'll have to get another beaver, because after having beaver, bro, pretty damn good. Pretty damn good, honestly. And the tail's not bad either. It's like got a really unique texture, but it's kind of got the flavor of like a mild, almost blandish beef fat, which if you like chewing fat, good for you. But I don't know. We'll have to do that sometime. Just cook a bunch of weird shit. What are you laughing at?
It's got a really unique texture, like the bottom of a leather boot that's been...
A beaver tail? Oh, no. No, no, no. No, so the tail has that freaking football skin on it, is what it seems like. And you have to throw that on like a bed of hot coals to get it to bubble and blister to get it off. There's really no good way to cut it off. So you throw it on like literally just hot coals and you just char the shit out of it. And then you can peel that skin off and discard it. And now you're left with a beaver tail that's just like white, almost looks like fish or striper colored, you know, white meat. But it's not meat, it's fat. But it doesn't have the texture of like beef fat where it's gelatin, real squishy. Yeah. And you know, it almost feels like fish meat without being as, gosh, it's so weird. That's what I'm saying. It's unique. It's like a fillet of fish meat, but it's not as flaky and delicate as fish meat would be. And it tastes like a mild beef fat. I don't know. We threw salt and pepper on it and ate it. And we both were looking at each other, me and my buddy Cash. And we were like, you know, in 1920, if I was the head of the table, that's what I would eat. You know, as the man of the house, you need to put on some fat for the winter because I was trapping my whole life and keeping my family fed. Like, that's what you'd eat, you know? And the, and the meat, though, the meat was like almost purple. It was so burgundy and like red and healthy looking. It was damn good. We made like pot roast out of it, made freaking beaver nachos. And I was like, dude, find me some more beaver. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. One of them creek beeves.
Well, that one took down your willow tree, didn't it?
Yeah, I freaking did. Cut so my whole willow tree down. Yeah, he got his. He got a 2-inch rage broadhead right in the shoulder.
Ugh, and that's not a very strong shoulder.
No, it went through him quick.
Oh, man. No, that's, you know, one
there
of the
it is, that, archery. We're talking archery right there for a second. We haven't talked archery a whole lot. This is all coming full circle now.
I've always wanted to actually do something with the tongues of the deer.
I got a pair of tongues in the freezer.
I got like five, you know.
Dude, what are you waiting for?
A reason? I don't know. Something.
You ever been hungry?
Yeah, but I also have a pile of backstraps, so I'm definitely gonna go for that first.
Yeah, but I mean, do you like? Do you ever go to get like a lengua burrito or something? A Mexican joint?
Lengua? Yeah, not so much.
You ever had it?
Yeah, I have. Nothing against it. Just a lot of the places where I'm at, they don't. They're not. I have to go out to the ghetto. Like in Sacramento to do that.
That place that we go during the Todd Hawkins shoot is like 45 yards from your house. And I bet they got a lengua burrito. That's probably really good.
They might. I was there tonight, actually.
See?
But I like their al pastor best.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, make your big old pile of lengua deer tongue for...
There's this gas station out in South Sac. Like Southeast Sac.
You cannot buy gas station tongue.
This was a really good Mexican joint. It's in a gas station, but it's its own restaurant. And so
that makes more sense. I'm like, dude, if you're buying 76 station prepackaged tongue, you're a psycho. Do you think sushi's bad? Probably a human tongue. You don't know.
Yeah. You know, especially being out in that area of town, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. It's a rough part of town. I always hated going there because of where it's at. Like, I never felt comfortable. It's just in a really poor, low income. Yeah. But the food was always super good. So I used to go out there a lot. But I want to do something with the tongue. And I've never gotten to do it, but you've seen that piece of fat that's behind the eyeball?
No, I've heard about that.
Steve Rinella talks about it on,
yeah,
and on his TV show. I've always wanted to try that.
That's a good point.
I got livers that I need to do something with. I want to make like a liverwurst with them.
That'd be cool. Have you ever tried caul fat?
What is caul fat?
It's that like spider web looking fat blanket that wraps the stomach.
Yeah, I have not. Usually someone, so I don't know if you would guess this about me, but I'm the guy that picks through every last piece of meat on the spine. I'm the guy that picks through every piece of meat and gets as much off of those bones as possible. So typically when I'm grabbing that stuff and trying to salvage it, someone will take it and throw it away because they know I'm going to cook them something with it and they're going to be upset about it later, or just the fact that I'm trying to do it.
It looks neat. I did it once. And like when you wrap that little lace, it's like,
yeah,
it's like a lace dress you're putting over your back strap made of fat. But I didn't think it was all that good, honestly. The fat, deer fat just doesn't have, it's not like it's Wagyu beef fat that you're just blessing your meat with. It's not as good as you'd think. And I wasn't a huge fan of it. Kind of reminded me of a gut pile. Maybe because, I don't know. I
think because that's where it comes from.
Well, I think I took pretty good care of it. I don't think it got like nasty. I haven't gut shot any deer in a long time. So I don't know. I just think that fat itself has a weird flavor to it. I wasn't a huge fan. I haven't done it since. I like trying shit like that though. Like multiple, you know, finding uses for a little bit of everything. Like, dude, do you see those steaks I cut off of that bear skull?
Yeah.
Oh my God, dude. They were massive. They were 10 ounces a piece. It was like I freaking cleaned a honker, like a breasted out a freaking goose or something. They were two nice, healthy steaks that I would have never expected to come from the skull, but they're the muscles that the lower jaw, when it comes down and goes up, that's where it connects. And that it got some biting power, dude, because those are some big ass muscles for that lower jaw.
Did you just put that to grind, or did you?
No, I did like a Mississippi pot roast in the Instapot.
Okay.
Yeah. You ever done that Mississippi pot roast? With it's like a Probably. Stick of butter. You throw in like a stick of butter, a cup of broth, like a ranch packet, like a dry packet of ranch mix.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like an au jus packet or a gravy mix or something like that. And then you're supposed to, I didn't. Take a whole jar of pepperoncinis, juice and all, just dump it in there for liquid and pepper flavor and stuff. And actually, and you can throw like a whole stick of butter in there if you want. And it always turns out super damn good. I didn't use the pepperoncinis.
I haven't done that, but my uncle does that with his bear meat pretty regularly.
It's
and that's like
good,
one of my
dude.
Favorite ways. It's probably not the exact same recipe, but it's basically
close enough.
Tears apart, you put it on some Hawaiian rolls and it's delicious.
That would be good. I always just do it over a bed of like jasmine rice or something, making like lunches or whatever for the week. But
yeah,
I got like a dozen roasts off of that bear and I'm so pumped about all that meat. I wish I could have a second tag, man. I can't get my wife to get a bear tag. She's not a huge fan. I think it's a mental thing. Go figure. But
don't want to kill Winnie the Pooh.
No, that's not it. I think it's just like, I don't know. They do look a lot like a dog.
Yeah.
Or just too many dumb people are like, bear's gross, and have never had it good or proper or whatever.
You cook any wild game decent. Like, most wild game, you don't even need to cook decent. Like, deer steaks, I rarely... Like, when down at the Bay Area Open, when I brought those down with my grill and I cooked them, all I had on them was sautéed onions. And they're delicious.
Oh, sauteed onions, they make anything better.
Yeah.
I love onions.
Butter, onions, deer steaks.
It's the backbone of America. It's like the heartbeat of America before Chevrolet became a thing.
Yeah. I mean, I prefer a little bit of seasoning, specifically salt, pepper, garlic, but...
SPG is a choice for me.
Since we're on the topic of,
as a letter,
you know,
can
what
you quote if you didn't catch it?
I was ignoring it because I watched 30 seconds of that TV show and I was just like, this thing is irritating me. I'm turning it off.
What? What was irritating about it?
I don't even remember.
It's kind of a little fast paced. Like the way that guy, it's a lot of talking. It's like the male, I'm gonna say this, it's the male version of freaking Gilmore Girls. If you've ever seen Gilmore Girls, I hate to be the writer. Oh, bro. If any of you listeners have had to sit through that shit, boy, it's like listening to a rap battle with no point. It's a lot of talking.
What I just made was like 20 pounds of snack sticks.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. Really stoked on these ones. I did jalapeno cheddar.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did maple
habanero.
Did you
smoke them or just cure them?
Cured and smoked.
Copy.
Yeah. Cure them for 25, 24 hours in the casing and then smoke them. Maple habanero.
Horse trading.
I told you I want to try those brats.
Dude, they're good. I'll trade you for some snack sticks, though.
I'll trade you for some brats because I got like 40 pounds of brats. How about that?
What brats from what?
Venison, elk.
Brats you made or had made?
I do all my own processing.
See, I was that way too. And then I was like, I have a good buddy who owns a butcher shop and he's a freaking stud and he's won awards for sausage and stuff. And yeah, I'm kind of like, yeah, I'd rather just you do it because that shit is bomb. I've never made brats before. I mean, that was my whole plan. It's like, I want to grind this whole bear and make brats because I love him so much. But like, I can't do what he did. There's no way.
Well, we also have the I think it's like 1.5 or 2 horsepower Cabela's grinder.
Yeah.
That smashes through it. And then I forgot, maybe it's like 5 liter, 15 liter, something like that. Sausage stuffer, dehydrator, everything you need to do it effectively. Yeah, and so, you know, just a couple Christmases and got everything you need to do it yourself.
Oh,
and
dude,
sign
me up.
Well, I'll get you something for Christmas this year. But
you know, Black Obus has been having some of that Weston, like meat grinders and stuff like that on a pretty fair discount.
We'll have to take a look because I need.
And
a,
I think
I need...
Meat Eater has a good coupon for them too, and they have some nice, like industrial style like grinders and shit. They're pretty legit brand, like LEM or something.
Yeah, my uncle owns like one of those fancy like high-end butcher shops out in the Sacramento area.
Oh,
and
really?
Yeah, he like, you know, the World Butchering Championship, kind of, you know, he was a part of it and everything, and great hunter too. But he was trying to get rid of his 5 horsepower commercial because they got a new one. And I was sitting there, I'm like, should I get it? I waited too long. It went to someone else. Because it's like a, you know, like a $1,500 grinder.
Sure.
And
sure.
Just, I didn't want to fork out the money at that time. And, you know, now it's like, now I want a bigger one. So.
Yeah.
I've been looking around at those.
There.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know what the plan is for this year for snack sticks and stuff because I just did a whole bunch. But I really like the maple habanero. Really like the jalapeno cheddar. Oh, it was so much better than I was expecting it to be. I was super impressed with it. And then I also did a garlic parmesan.
Ooh, that sounds great.
Yeah, all super good. So definitely excited to bring those out.
Parmesan.
Yeah. The other thing I want to do is I really want to get into artisanal.
Artesian?
Like, yeah, artesian, artisanal, whatever it is. Like venison snacks. Like something more than just like a venison crostini.
Oh, what?
A venison crostini?
What's that?
Like thinly shaved back strap. And then you like hit it with the torch. And then put it on a crunchy piece of toast baguette with different
balsamic
spread
or something.
Yeah, like balsamic. There's different spreads you can do and whatnot.
You ever
I've
had
done
a
that.
What's that? What is it when you just thin slice it and eat it raw?
I know what you're talking about. They do it with like Kobe beef and stuff like that.
Maybe, yeah, probably.
Yeah. You know, growing up, my dad said they used to eat ground beef raw all the time.
Really?
Yeah. He's like, yeah, they'd just, my mom would just roll it up in a ball and hand me one while she was making dinner.
I'm all right with it.
My dad did grow up really poor, though. So,
you know what? Is he still alive?
Yes.
Then that's all that matters. All this. Like,
longest living scar male in history.
So, see?
Yeah.
He's a record setter. Maybe we should eat more raw beef. You know?
My brain went somewhere else, but. But anyways, let's talk.
We should talk about archery.
I know. I could talk about snacks and hunting and everything all day long.
It all kind of works.
I'm definitely excited when I get back from my trip this year to talk like regulations and some of the changes that we're going to see in 2026.
In the great state of Idaho, you mean?
Yes.
Copy.
Yeah.
I think we have an expert in the field we might be able to tap into.
Hopefully one or two. Cool. But I want to get your opinion on, since, because it made me think of it, you know, Idaho. Have you looked at those truth bows?
No.
You know, your buddy.
When
Bush
you're happily
Baker.
Married, you don't look at other women. That's how I feel about it.
I can, you are very happily married to your bow tech.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I heard that. I think Bowtech actually gave him a cease and desist. And homeboy's like,
exactly what he did.
This is my garage. I'll build my shit however I want to. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know who that guy is, but he sounds like a
straight
patriot.
Baller.
Yeah.
He goes, I talked to my legal counsel.
Is he? He's not a Struthers guy, is he? Is his name like Kevin or something? Like, do you know much about this? Like,
I'd have to look at it again. I do think his name's Kevin. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it is Kevin.
If it's the same guy from Struthers, then that makes so much sense.
Let me see. Can you still see me?
Nope. You left. Right. Where'd you go?
I'm going to pull it up because I have it saved right here.
No, I can do that better. I have a phone that works.
All right.
My God, Truth Archer is owned by primarily owned, this is AI overview. Truth Archery's owners are primarily Brian Pigman.
Yeah, I know he's a part of
his last name, Quaka, and Justin Cook. The bow company was launched in collaboration with Kevin Struther.
That's, yeah.
The designer and manufacturer. So as a prior Struther archery shooter. Actually, sorry. I owned a Struther, an SX Rush. It was a fantastic bow. Way back when I shot Bowhunter Freestyle with my boy Tom Begley, we shot for Moxie Archery, which was a spinoff of Struther. Another great bow. Cool limpuck design. I don't know what happened. They had a great freaking bow. And I don't know if it was marketing or just lack of capital or what, but they never could get off the damn ground all the way. So this guy does know some stuff. He's a sharp cat and can build a bow for sure. The Pigman? Yeah, I don't know what that guy's about. But this Kevin dude is not an idiot.
I know who the Pigman is, but I don't really like pay attention to him. All I know is he kills lots of pigs.
Yeah, whatever. So does like every other guy in Texas, I feel like.
Yeah, true. But yeah, they said I talked to legal counsel and we are 100% sure that it does not violate any patents. I already have a patent that's da 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 da. I told Bowtech, we are not violating anything.
Get off my lawn.
And I consider this matter finished. And that's like his response was like,
yeah, you know what? He's gonna get a Patriot backing, and I don't blame him.
You know, your buddy Butch Baker loves his.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I like Butch so damn much that I give Truth a little pat on the back. And I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't know what they've got that Bowtech told them to cease and desist on, but Bowtech's got some pretty badass technology that I will die on a mountain over, like especially Deadlock.
So would you say that Deadlock is your favorite part of your Bowtech? Here, let me say that a little bit louder because I whispered. Would you say that Deadlock is your favorite piece of that bow?
Probably. I would say that Deadlock is the most convenient way to tune your bow as an end consumer that there's ever been. That's okay. What I would say. Like, I was really happy with top hats when I had a Matthews. X. Yeah, exactly. Halen X, not X comp, Halen X. And I was like, oh, top hats, pretty cool. I got three options and I hope one of them works. But it was a simple system as a owner of a bow press, but not everybody has a bow press. Not a lot of people don't have a bow press. And I'll be damned if that Deadlock system isn't the slickest damn thing there is.
The Truth. I'm not defaming Truth at all.
Defending or defaming?
Either way.
Well, there's a big difference.
I'm not defaming Truth at all. But they got Deadlock. That's what Bowtech went on after him for.
They have Deadlock?
It's different, but it's the same thing.
I gotta check this out. You know what? Honestly, I don't see them becoming the next big manufacturer.
No, there's too many.
Who gives a shit? But
and there's too many ground.
It's like Obsession. Are they still around?
Yeah, they are.
Are they?
Yeah. Bummer. Yeah, every year when the ATA comes around, they always are posting, we got the best bow of the ATA or whatever.
Bummer because they have a bad bow or anything, but it's a bummer that I didn't know that because they obviously have something. But they don't have anybody that keeps it in, at least my perspective.
They have their
still alive.
What they do have is their limb pockets a full 12 inches in front of the grip.
Oh, that's so terrible. Do they really? Dude, when the Matthews like Z7 and shit came out, it's pretty easy to realize why that's not going to feel good. Like, the geometry is just not there for it.
Yeah. And you're going to have a lot of misses due to, you know, slightly induced torque because
slightly
you're, well,
yeah. No,
a slight amount of torque is going to get exacerbated on the aero because of the fact that your pivot point is so far behind the limb pockets and things like that.
You know what sucks is if I type in Truth Archery on Google, I don't get Truth Archery.
No?
I mean, starting from the top, I get Mountain Archery. I get Archery Talk Forum. I get Bergie Bowsmith. I get Truth Archery's Facebook. I get Truth Archery's Instagram, and then I get Podium Archer. I've still yet to find their website. Not on the first page of Google, I cannot get like Truth Archery at all. I'd just like to go on their website and see what their, you know, their tuning system looks like. If you type in Truth Archery and the first thing that comes up is Facebook, and the first picture that comes up is a tractor pull. A blown alcohol, probably twin engine tractor pull truck. Like, you can't see it, but see that tractor pull rig?
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense. I mean, I'm all into blown alcohol, big block Chevys and shit, but I don't get it. So that's why I think they're a non-contender.
Did I talk to you about...
Do they not have a website, period?
No, they do. I've been to it.
Dude, I can't find it.
Did they already block you?
They must be in tight with Cameron Haynes.
Did I talk to you about my thought about my assessment of shooting a bow with and without a string stop?
I feel like you sent me a menagerie of Snapchat videos, and you basically hated it.
Yeah, that's a good short summary. But I've taught.
Yeah, so I listened to the podcast you listened to. It was who was it? Was it Alex on Archery Unfiltered?
Yeah.
Is it that episode?
Well, I know he brings it up in that one, and that's that made me revisit it.
Yep. And I honestly, dude, I was thinking the exact same thing. I've never thought about toying with it. Normally, this is a cheating. I'm going to let you in on my little secret. If Paige doesn't do it, I don't do it. But there's a lot of people that do. And I know it works for some people. There's a lot of people that it works for. I just, dude, there's too much shit we can change and mess around and rabbit holes. Like, one less rabbit hole for me, please. And a Sprite.
So, obviously, I was shooting behind Gaius at Oregon, right? Uh-huh.
And he doesn't shoot one.
He doesn't shoot one. He has it. Yep. He's out. And
it works for him.
I mean, I've shot with Dave at Indoor League and whatnot. And so I understand
the premise. Does he shoot one? He doesn't shoot one.
No, he doesn't shoot one.
A lot of PSC guys don't.
They don't. And I don't know if it's a PSC thing, but I'm not going to do it justice, so I'm not going to get into it. But they have an explanation for the knock leaving the string in a certain way as to why.
No. The way Alex explained it made sense. It makes sense to me that you're not stopping it shy. It's leaving between the axles. It makes sense. But I think, like anything, you can do whatever you want, but you're going to have to make a change and then adapt to it. And there's guys that have taken it off and adapted to it and moved their point of impact and then, you know, went on from there.
My assessment is that it is not leaving the string at the axles.
Not at the axles, no. But I'm saying it's a better middle point. It's, you know, you've got two axles and nothing stopping them. So when your string comes inside and makes that bow, like, essentially, mm-hmm. it's more of a normal convex or concave or whatever the fuck. A normal arc between the two axles, whereas, you know, you have your arc between your axles and then a string stop throwing a weird wowie into that. Like, we've all made it work, but I can see it being a weird thing to tune for.
So I did some tests with different size rods in and out and taking impact marks.
Different size rods or different gaps between the rod and the string?
That.
Copy.
Using different length rods to, you know, because obviously, you know, if I have a 2-inch rod, it's not going to go out to 4 inches. You know what I mean? That's what I meant by different size rods to get different gaps.
I've been told.
And to find where that impact point is on the stop after the axles. And the farthest I got it out on my bow was 4 inches inside of the quote-unquote brace height. Does that make sense?
No.
All right, so I've talked to a few very high-level shooters about this since. Because after running my test, because I did it, I talked to Dave about it. Tim Gillingham told me on my 40 that I needed to take the string stop out to get better groups and things like that. And I've never gotten better groups without. And so I went ahead and tried it again after hearing them talk about it. And once again, I hated it. I don't so much dislike the feel. It doesn't bother me there. But I think I shot like 40 arrows. So like, you know, a 400 round. Yeah. I think I shot like a 384, like 5X.
So my point is, if you have a bow tuned with one in and then you just take it out and then try it in a comparison, I don't think that's fair. I think you would have to retune everything to have the rod out. And once you think you've got it the best you have it, then put that apples to apples. I don't think just removing it is going to be the cure, if I had to guess. And if you're getting the results that you're getting versus the results that we know other people like Gaius and whoever mm-hmm. are getting without one, it obviously works better than the results you're getting. So there's got to be a separate, a whole other tune. I don't know what it takes and I'm not going to do it. But I don't know. Is it apples to apples, you think?
So.
And why would you detune your bow just to prove this out?
Something that you mentioned that I didn't bring up was I shot it a couple times without, and that before I started running my test. And I thought about that. I said, let me go and shoot this through paper and see what it's doing. See if it's still running, you know, a nice tear, just like all my other arrows. And it wasn't running the same tear. It was slightly higher. And
but not bad, right?
No, not bad. Like, you know, I typically shoot like a quarter inch high tear. Yeah, maybe quarter inch on an outdoor arrow. And it was probably like, now, half inch on the long side, you know what I mean? Probably closer to 3/8.
Mm-hmm.
And so all I did was adjust my rest. I didn't adjust my knock point because I already had my soft knots in. And the way that I tune is off of the axle to axle, get it right in the middle. That's what my Matthews likes. That's what I like, how I like to set it up.
Really?
Yeah. Just right off the middle of the bow.
I've tried that because that makes a lot of sense to do it that way. But I feel like that puts me pretty high in the burger, if I remember right. I'd have to go back and double check. But if I measured strictly off axles and put it right in the middle, I'd put...
The bottom of the shaft is in the bottom third to middle of the burger hole.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at. And on an outdoor arrow, I roll it. But on a four-fletch indoor arrow, it gets a little bit iffy because the shelf, the cutout in the riser, where the shelf is on the Bowtech Reckoning anyway, is not super gracious. I wish it would hog that out a little bit more.
Yeah.
Just for some bane clearance. But I've never had contact for that matter. It always looks really iffy and I look at it and I'm like, Jesus, I might touch. Never do. So it's kind of a non-issue, but it does not give me a warm, fuzzy feeling. It works, but.
So all I did was move the rest to adjust for the slightly bit higher tear that I was getting. I didn't move it to a bullet hole. I moved it to what I shoot my bow at.
Yeah.
And then I continued shooting it. Like I said, I didn't score well with it. And like I said, I don't know what I was scoring because when I was putting this to the test, I want to shoot good shots when I'm practicing this. So I'm not putting any kind of pressure to shoot a 300 or, you know, get the score of what this is doing. So I don't know the exact score that I shot, but it would have to be below 390 out of 400. Nice. And I definitely did not exceed 10 X's out of 40 arrows.
Decent. And,
yeah, real decent. And I was shooting really, really well at that time, like during that day, during that practice session and getting everything set. I was just in the zone shooting really well. My shot process has been running awesome. So I've just been holding and shooting really well. And so I brought it to a couple of engineers and higher people up that know more of like the design and the purpose behind those things. I asked questions there. I talked to some of the most stout shooters that, you know, even we know and whatnot, and asked their opinion. Anywho.
Yeah.
Now that the internet is back up and running.
Jeez Louise. Come on, Elon, get your shit together.
I need Starlink posted right here. Anywho, the point that I was trying to make was, you know me, I'll put anything to the test a minimum of once. For this specific thing, I've done it now like three, four times. This time I actually ran some tests on trying to figure out where does that string oscillate past. And the best description or synopsis or however you want to put it after speaking with some engineers and some people in the industry, as well as some of the top shooters, you know, came up with this word hang time. And you are basically adding hang time to your arrow.
I can understand that. So you're meaning like you're almost, the arrow's coming off the string later, as in like you're almost like you're shooting a shorter brace height or something a little less forgiving, correct?
So exactly. I said that to someone in the industry and they said, you're not making sense. A brace height is a set thing. What are you trying to explain? And I explained it and they're like, that's not brace height because brace height is set, right? So
sure.
What you're talking about is the time at which the string releases the arrow,
yeah,
in relation to your brace height. And therefore, why do we incorporate a brace height into the bow in the first place?
Could you essentially just, if you had a 6-inch brace height, could you jam your freaking string stop out an inch and create a 7-inch brace height? That'd probably be a terrible idea.
Terrible idea.
But it would change things in that direction.
Yes. Yes. From what I understand and based on what was provided to me, because that was even brought up, you know, one of the guys says, you would never push your string stop into that string, would you? Pass to where it's supposed to be? No. So then why would you move it off a center to where it's not? And more so, why would you move it off a center in such a drastic way in the sense of taking out any sort of consistent...
Well, I'm picturing... that string, you've seen them in slow motion. They don't just stop perfectly straight up and down between the axles. They have a big wow in the middle. You would think a smoother arc between top axle and bottom axle would create some sort of smooth release or warm, fuzzy feeling in your belly. I don't know.
The thing that kept coming out is between engineers and industry individuals and top level shooters was the addition of hang time. And what does that hang time play into?
What is, explain hang time.
The hang time, basically.
This is between release and release?
Like more so. So for me, I'm going to give whole numbers. So 30, we'll say 30 inch draw with, say, a Matthews TRX with a 7-inch brace height.
Okay.
I'm effectively shooting that bow. And once again, because I'm not an engineer or things like that, I might not explain this properly, so forgive me. Effectively, the release point is at 23 inches, not at 30, right?
Yeah.
So by eliminating that extra factor, or that factor being the stop releasing that arrow, you're adding hang time past that quote
which
unquote
would normally
brace height.
Be a negative
thing, impact,
correct?
Because
unless your form is tits, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and so maybe specifically some of these
should be less forgiving.
Yes, exactly. 100%. That's the general synopsis. A bow without a string stop cannot be as forgiving as a bow with a string stop because you are not giving the arrow a consistent leave point. And I also proved is a strong word, but when I put it to the test, not every single time did my string oscillate to 4 inches. That was the longest one. The most common one where I got contact on the stop that I put in there was roughly 2.5 to 3.25. That's when that was the range where it was most common to see contact on the strike. the striker pad. And I just kept bringing it out and out and out until I didn't see it anymore. And that was past the, about the 4.5 inch mark was where, you know, there was no strike. And a part of that could be where that string stop is on the Matthews 40. And once again, we're talking about my bow. You know, this is my test done on my bow.
Yeah, but it should be.
However, the people that I was talking to, they don't shoot, not all of them shoot Matthews.
I can't imagine it being a Matthews thing. I mean, wheels and axles and string stops, like all that part works exactly the same. The wheels spin, it reels the string in, strings them across, hits a string stop. Like, I can't imagine that being a brand specific problem.
No, I don't think it is at all, especially with those who I spoke to who don't shoot Matthews. And they,
does anybody shoot a Matthews and not shoot a string stop?
The only one that I know of, and it's not consistent because he tinkers on his bow so much, is Tim Gillingham. But
yeah,
I was talking
to him.
If Tim
shoots a string stop, there's no reason not to, because he's got to prove that out 100 ways to Sunday.
Well, he's the one that told me to take it out on the 40. I took it out on the 40 last year after Reading, and my groups went from being sighted in at 70 to not sighted in at 70.
So that makes me think, though, do you have to start your whole tune over? It seems like you might.
Maybe that time I didn't run all these tests and do all the extra stuff.
Yeah, why would you? You were fine.
My grouping went wide. It wasn't sure. Like everything's solid down here now. You know what I mean?
No, I get it.
It went all over the place.
Yeah.
And so,
I mean, it might tune. It might be, who knows, dude? It's going to ruin everything, probably. I'm sure you could, different length arrows or, you know, a different center shot or.
Yeah.
All of it. Like, I'm sure you
like
could
I said,
tune it
I'm not
to
an
that,
expert.
But
yeah,
why?
Like I said, I'm not an expert on it. But I, you know, for sake of trying to gain any point that I can, you know, I wanted to give it another try. And I did.
No, I get it. When I heard it, I thought the exact same thing. And then I went, Paige has like 100 limbs. And she filters through every one of them and filters, you know, mix matches, does all kinds of weird stuff. But removing the string stop, to my knowledge, is not
it's
one.
It's not
of them.
One.
So I'm
it's
not,
not
doing
one.
It. I'm not doing it. And the bow shoots phenomenal. It's me. I'm the problem.
Yeah.
You know
well,
what I mean?
I did all these silly tests just to kind of squash my own mental bug of being like, why isn't this working? You know, what's going on here? Because it can't, if I'm shooting well, right? It can't just be that I'm making bad shots.
Yeah.
And so what I think it comes down to is the extra hang time that you're getting in that arrow. So any sort of whatever your form is pushing out and away. And most recently, since Oregon, you know, hanging out with Gaius all weekend, kind of, well, behind him. Anyways.
What?
Just terrible thoughts came to my head when I said behind him. I was like, that's not a guy I want to get behind.
Yeah.
He's a big dude.
Well, you have a better chance than most. You're pretty tall.
Yeah, but he makes me look short. But anyways, I've been tinkering with the push system. Poof. And so,
what in the hell are you talking about? The push system.
Driving to get that release to break.
Gotcha.
Driving off the front hand.
I hated that when I tried it.
For indoor, it seems to be working really good right now. I
feel like that's something that's very
unique.
No, not so much unique, but I feel like that doing it that way, I've never like executed with that hand. That hand stays put. That's its job to me. But I feel like that is something that could make, like, if your draw length isn't exactly dialed, I could see where that wouldn't work that good. I feel like you'd have to have your system really, really dialed for that to work well.
I'm shooting an inch short of my draw length. So really? I've been shooting for 2 years now. I've been shooting at 30 and a half instead of 31 and a half.
Well, who's to say 31 and a half is correct? Maybe 30 and a half is what you should be shooting.
You remember 2 years ago at Break the Barriers when I
don't remember anything. Where'd you go?
I'm right here.
I lost your visual. There you are.
Right here. Something popped up on my screen, so
switching to a new satellite.
But at BTB a couple years ago when I think it was the year we won the final shoot off. I had Dave Cousins. Remember Dave Cousins came over and looked at my draw length and everything? I said, I just feel like I'm a little long.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at my draw length and he goes, no, it looks good. It looks like you need to just give it a little bit more front pressure. Drive into it a little bit more. And you know what that's from. And that's because I don't get my shoulder rolled all the way back.
Yeah.
Like most. That's my body's form. That's
just an alignment thing.
Just where my shoulders align are not with my elbow fully behind my head like that. Because that right now, it doesn't even feel good doing that in here. So, but yeah, I had him look at my draw length, and because I was just struggling on those uphills, and he goes, you're just struggling on the uphills because you got a long draw length and it's uphill and you're trying to make a hinge roll. And I was like, well, that makes a lot of sense. But then when I got the first title, it didn't come with my mods in it ready to go. So I shot an inch and a half short for the first month that I had the bow until my mods came. And then when I got my 30 and a half inch mods, it felt like I was holding behind my head.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, let's split the difference and try 30 and a half and 31. And I went back and forth between the two, and the two both shoot good. I just scored better with the 30 and a half, and I've just run it since. And another benefit to that was being able to cut my arrow down a little bit shorter and get into the 350 spine to save some weight.
Right.
Tim just made a video about that. He's like, having a long draw doesn't always benefit you. Because now I have to shoot a longer arrow and a stronger spine, which adds a whole bunch of weight.
Yeah.
And I was struggling with that because I was in the 270s. And even Doug was saying, why are you in the 270s? You have a long draw. Well, I'm shooting a 300 spine target arrow.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to shoot a 300 spine. Let's get a 340 in that bow. And we worked for a full day trying to get a 340 to tune out of my TRX 40 at 31 and a half. And the only thing that tuned was the 300. And we changed shaft sizes. I went to, like a 246 inner diameter shaft, everything to try and get it to tune. I just wouldn't tune. So it allowed me to tune my bow better and the arrows group better. And, now my target arrows are going, like 295 if I want them to.
Perfect.
But I typically cut them a little bit long. And so I'm running about a 400 grain arrow, and they are shooting anywhere from 285 to 290. So long story short, based upon my assessment of the and then talking to industry people and top pro shooters, was you're adding hang time, which allows any sort of inconsistency or even just ignition movement from the shot breaking to put effect on that arrow before it leaves the bow. And as a golfer, I can 100% relate to the feel aspect that Alex was talking about, because that's why I play blades. I play blade irons. That's what I've always played. It feels like the moment I contact that ball, I can tell which way that ball is going, left or right, and whether or not I hit it clean, flush, top, blade, whatever I did to that ball, I can tell just based on the feel.
Yeah.
So 100% respect that aspect, shoot what feels good, right?
Sure.
That's so if shooting a bow that feels like you're getting that feedback from the bow, then do it 100%. I just,
that's something that I've never appreciated, I think, is like, we're always looking for data acquisition, right? Quantifiable things that are telling us good or bad. But I've never had a bow, like, I never shot like Hoyts with spiral cams and no draw stop and, you know, stuff that gave you a lot of, you know, to anybody else shooting, it would feel terrible. But like feedback, like my bow, I don't think gives me a whole lot of feedback, but I can appreciate that for sure. Just that wanting to, it's just another data point almost that you can only,
it's
feel.
A personal data point.
Sure.
It's a personal data point because everyone feels and interacts with their bow a different way.
Dude, I had a few buckets of balls at the driving range in Almanor a couple of weeks ago. And you can tell when you top the shit out of something or, you know, just hit it too far back towards the shaft. Like it lets you know. You don't have to see it. You know, that was a junk shot.
I mean, if you think there's tinkering in archery, the amount of tinkering that goes on in golf is insane. Back when I was playing all the time and whatnot, I had my shafts tested and it's been 15 years since they did it, so it or more. But oscillated in a way so that every single shaft flexes in the exact same point and flexes.
You had them spine indexed, essentially.
Spine indexing shafts put into the clubs. I had the hosels changed so that the angle of the face lied exactly perfect for me. I had different weight put in on different points of the club face, you know, all kinds of different things just to make each shot. Yeah, the tinkering that goes on.
You still never made the PGA Tour.
No, I didn't. No.
Shucks.
Ah, it's rough.
Oh, well.
I played with a kid that's... I know he's played in a few PGA Tour events, but I don't think he's a full-time PGA. He's not on the tour 100%. Yeah. He's like on that. He's basically a AAA pro golfer. You know, he plays on the leagues right below. Yeah.
Top. Can you imagine if Caleb played golf? I feel like he's got the exact temperament to do it well.
He wouldn't hit the ball far, though.
Why?
He's not a very big guy.
Yeah, but I bet he'd be clean. I bet his stroke would be so freaking clean.
What?
Have the exact same sound every time. It would just be...
Yep.
Yep.
It would. There was a kid that I played with. So I could always hit the long ball. That was the thing that gave me the advantage back when I played because I was so far out in front of everyone. I could drive greens on par fours and stuff. There's this kid, and he became one of the top kids on our team. When I first met him, he hit his driver like 160 yards. But every single shot he took was just perfectly straight down the middle. Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. So, yeah, he's getting to the green in two, and I've been there since the tee box. But his ball
still putting
is within a 10-foot circle. And I'm on the fringe now on the backside of the green, having to putt 60 feet to get it near the hole.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, it was just one of those things. He could, every single club was just dead straight. He just couldn't hit it far. He got farther as he got taller, but it's definitely one of those things that I can respect and understand the feel aspect of something. And, you know, it's like what we say at the shop, you know. Gotta look good to, and you know, enjoy shooting, you know, and part of that is the feel. You gotta enjoy shooting the bow and the way that bow feels.
Yeah.
But something that I've been doing recently with ChatGPT, which I brought up earlier, it will calculate your projected arrow speed based on your draw length, bow poundage, arrow weight, and what bow you're shooting.
Let's try it out.
Let's try it out.
No, let's not. I don't have a chronographed number to verify it with.
It's not 100% accurate, but it's a way for me at the shop when I'm talking to someone about maybe getting a new set of arrows. They're, you know, looking at a new set of arrows and they're like, yeah, but what's really the difference between, you know, an 8.5 grains per inch shaft and a 9.5 grains per inch shaft? Well, you're looking at about 30 grains over, you know, the whole arrow or whatever it is, right? Depending on the arrow length. Basic thought is every 3 grains is roughly a foot per second. So, you know, that's 10 feet per second. And what I can do is I can say if we're shooting the lift X at 33 inch axle to axle at 29.5 with a 425 grain arrow on a 28 and a half inch draw length, the calculated bow speed for that arrow is going to be roughly
278.
And then, well, let's look at what it is with a 475 grain arrow, because now you've added weight based upon that shaft. Now it's a 260, 265. Yeah. And I can sit there and I can say, look, this is the difference on the calculation, just the math side of things that show you that this arrow is going to shoot faster, flatter. It's not going to be 100% perfect. I did do it with a customer at the shop. It was pretty cool. And it was off by like seven feet per second. Mm-hmm. He was shooting like 287 and it said he was going to be shooting like 293 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put him in a lighter shaft and bumped his poundage up. And now I'm pretty sure he's out hunting right now for elk. So
I got a message tonight from a guy who listens to the show. Hold on. And he was asking about my arrow weight on my hunting bow. And hold on a second. And I was like, dude, I don't even know. I don't even weigh that stuff anymore. And what the hell's his name? Just cuz. He said he was a fan. CD is his damn name. Hold on. Well, whatever that means. He hit me up asking about it, and I remember being super concerned with arrow weight. And, you know, there's been that whole, everybody goes down that, you know, if you're coming into hunting especially, you get into listening to people back in the day like Aaron Snyder or that ranch fairy dude, and you want to go super heavy and plow through shoulder blades and all that stuff. And let me tell you what. Those super heavy arrows suck to tune. They're not fun. They're quiet. They quiet your bow down quite a bit. But your pin gaps are huge. Like, there's a lot of negatives to it. And if you just have a really bitchin' broadhead, God, you're so much better off than trying to create just a freaking, you know, you could have a blunt tip on there on some of these 600 grain arrows that would just bust through a whole deer. Like, you don't need that. And some people's draw lengths don't, you know, it doesn't work that way. Like, you just can't get that kind of speed or power. But man, don't overthink this stuff and trying to shoot for a number or an arrow weight grain or any of that stuff. Get you a good broadhead. It's actually a lot like how rifle things have been kind of taking a step back, where everybody's like, you know, should I shoot a 6.5 Creedmoor or a 6.5 PRC? And it's like, they're the exact same thing. They're the exact same thing, essentially, because you're shooting the same bullet. It's the Creedmoor is going to have a lesser impact velocity at distance versus the PRC by a couple hundred feet. It's the same bullet. Like, they're all at one point going to go 2,800 feet per second. One's going to do it further than the other. Same thing with arrows. Like, get you a good, the bullet is what matters in rifles. It's not so much, I mean, the impact speed takes, you know, a lot into it, but like, that's your broadhead in rifles, right? You get a good expansion, you know, bullet or something like that. Like, that's where the damage happens. It's not the caliber, you know, it's the speed. And sorry, not the speed. It's the way in which that bullet reacts to speed.
Foot pounds of energy.
And a lot of people are debunking foot pounds. Like, oh, you need X amount of foot pounds. Like, a 300 PRC with a 215 grain burger is going to have a shit ton of foot pounds, but like that doesn't equate to damage. Like there's a threshold there where you're creating enough damage. A 243 at a certain distance, it creates plenty of damage. I know friends that have shot 6 Creedmoors that are like, I don't want more damage than this. A 90 grain 6 Creedmoor bullet, they're like, please God, don't ruin any more meat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a threshold there. And the same thing, if you have a bow that's just not, you don't have the draw length or you don't have the weight or whatever, choose a good freaking broadhead. And I'm not, dude, I just found out about beasts like a couple months ago. I'm not in any way, shape or form paid or any of that shit by Beast, but they do have the sharpest broadhead, I believe, from any factory that you can get your hands on. And like, that is a huge plus when you don't have a lot of weight or a lot of poundage. You know, if you're trying to just stuff the same old Walmart muzzy through a deer and you have, you know, no draw length, you got no poundage, you don't got all this stuff in your favor, like that's going to be a detriment. So I think a lot of guys can stop overthinking things and just choose a better front end to that arrow and save them so much trouble. Yeah. And overthinking. I kind of saw this guy's messages a little bit of maybe like worried about if his arrow weight was sufficient or enough. And it's like, dude, who gives a shit what it weighs? Do you have a good broadhead? That's all that freaking matters, in my opinion. And he's from the East Coast. I feel like it's probably not 100-yard mule deer shots out in the plains. If I had to guess, it's probably uptight, plenty close enough to do any kind of damage with any kind of boat or poundage. But I don't know. I think it's just something that happened this evening and I wanted to touch on.
No, I think that's super valid because for the longest time, like Muzzy and Montex, they've kind of been like the industry standard for, say, like a fixed blade.
And there's nothing wrong with them.
No, there's nothing at all. But we do have companies now that are taking the initiative to build a sharper blade on that. And Beast is one of them. The T2 is also incredibly sharp. I've cut finger. I want to say it's G5, but it's their mechanical.
Mm.
It's new this year or maybe last year it came out. Levi Morgan's running it. It's a mechanical.
Levi's running it, not a Schwacker?
Levi
like owns Schwacker, part of it, I feel like. I could be totally wrong.
Maybe I'm thinking about someone else. I could be wrong.
I love Schwackers too.
If I was going to run any broadhead right now, if I had the deer tag that I wanted for archery, I'd have been shooting the Beast.
Just because they are the sharpest damn thing that you'll get sold. There's a good demonstration. I sent it to a couple of buddies of mine that were asking me earlier in the season about that broadhead. I was like, dude, here's a great example. And I think they shared it maybe today of just a broadhead like this going through a set of vertical ribs.
Yeah.
And as soon as it got past it, and it's, you're not going to find that anywhere else. That is a handy thing to have, a broadhead that can just weasel its way right through the trickiest of scenarios. You know,
that broadhead to me eliminates that whole concept of I need to shoot 85 pounds. I need to shoot 90 pounds so I can bust through that shoulder first of all, let's work on making better shots.
Yeah, let's not hit the shoulder.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what? You could center punch a rib. You have a pretty good chance of center punching a rib. There's a lot of them and they're not spaced that far apart. I still think you're going to get through the damn thing if you have any kind of energy or good arrow flight. A lot of it is you want your arrow driving from the ass to the nose. That's a big part of it. If your arrow comes in sideways, you've deflected a lot of your penetration energy right out of the gate. And you can't always fix that because of crosswind or whatever. But having good arrow flight, which a lot of times comes from shooting a freaking mechanical. I know fixed blades can be tuned, but like if you don't have the means to tune or you don't want to revamp your entire being around a broadhead, don't. Shoot a damn expandable that you can trust and know that's going to fly great at distance, straight, and, you know, pound from the ass end all the way to the nose. Like, that's going to get you a lot more.
Yeah. I mean, look at Mike. He killed a monster brown bear up in Alaska 60 pounds. I don't remember what broadhead he was shooting. But just on a 60-pound bow, and Mike's not a big guy. He's probably 27, 27 and a half inch draw length.
Yeah.
On
the,
whatever.
One of the biggest, what people would consider the toughest animals, hides to go mm-hmm. through. Yeah, that's a great testament.
Yeah.
I'd like to know what that broadhead was.
Yeah, I do too. I do know.
Make a note for next episode.
Yes, we'll bring it next episode. What is the brown bear killing broadhead of 2025? That has to be the biggest bear I have ever seen.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Right.
Absolutely insane. Almost 10 feet tall. I want to say he was only like 20 yards.
God, that'd be terrifying. You talk about target panic, dude.
Yards or something like that.
Imagine having your next freaking shoot-off arrow be life or death.
Yeah. It was sub 40 yards, pressure. I'm pretty sure. Another one. I'll get the arrow, the shot distance for the next one, but it was not a long shot by any means.
Yeah.
At a tournament, you need to be hitting that.
Yeah.
That shot, because that's one of those gimme target shots. Yeah. It was pretty, it's pretty cool to see that you don't need a 90-pound bow.
Dude, not at all.
You don't need to keep hammering. You just need
keep getting
to
hammered.
Make good shots. Exactly. Toast to that.
No, you're right. Dude, freaking Ted Nugent and his wife, they shoot like 53 pounds and they stack them all day long.
Ted Nugent.
Yeah, there's tons of proof out there for, I think everything is starting to, people are starting to realize like you don't need 90 pounds to kill an elk. No. You don't need a 338 Lapua to kill an elk. Guys are killing them with 22 Creedmoors.
Yeah.
And I love it because there's a lot of people out there going, nope, not possible. Can't do it. They're too tough. Nope. It's not true.
If you,
you just need a good, there's so many animals that are dying from a 22 Creedmoor. Dan built one the last episode. That orange and black gun was a 22 Creed. And he says he's going to shoot all kinds of wolves and deer and all kinds of shit with it. A 90 grain bullet ripping through anything. It's going to be, and they are, terrifyingly effective.
Yeah.
Same thing as a 26 inch draw length 380 grain arrow with a really deadly sharp broadhead is going to do a lot of freaking damage.
Absolutely.
You don't have to have Ranch Fairy 600 grain bullshit. Like it's not a thing.
They've done a test on that too, where they shot a 450 grain arrow and a 800 grain arrow and a 600 grain arrow at cinder blocks at super high velocity, like through some sort of special compound bow. Crossbow.
Mm-hmm.
And the 800 grain didn't even penetrate the outer shell of that concrete, whereas the 400 just went straight through it in and out.
There's something to be said, dude. Yeah, who knows? I don't hunt cinder blocks that much.
Me either.
I love me a decent ping gap once in a while. You know, I like to stay in that 280, 290 range if I can help it.
So I weighed
my arrow tonight. It was 421 grains. And that arrow went through that bear. And it was a big bear.
Yeah, he
like
was
it
big.
It wasn't
was
even there.
Well,
we should wrap this
close
up.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely want to give a shout out to Dan, who got top production this weekend.
Dude,
out in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
I know we didn't hit on it much in the podcast, so we'll definitely, next time he's on, we'll talk to him more about some of his accolades and the things that he's done, because
he is a studded individual.
He is, and I think he's a little bit more humble, or a little bit more
all the more reason to like
reserved him. Yeah, a little bit more reserved on that, so he's not one to be boisterous about.
No, he's a multi-time national champion.
Yeah, he's an incredible shooter. You know, one of our buddies hit me up and he goes, whatever you do next year, you need to make sure you put me on an outlaw target with Dan, because I got a lot of questions for him.
Oh, dude. Dan is such a good time. I loved that episode. That was a lot of fun.
I'm so excited for next year Outlaw, for him to do it, and who he's going to be partnered with.
Who's he partnering with?
He is going to be partnered with the young stud, future stud muffin of Northern California, if he keeps working at it, Jesse Willis.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. That's going to be fun. Those two are going to be great.
Yeah.
That's going to be a team.
Jesse hit me up, said, I'm looking for a partner if you know anyone. And I was like, I do know a guy.
Damn.
So I went ahead and partnered them up. And I think Dan will be a great shooter here very quickly.
Yeah.
Anyway, shout out to him for another success. That trip that he went on after the podcast, Oregon.
Yeah, up to Bend, Oregon. He won that shoot.
He won that shoot as well. He's just killing it. And he's getting into archery and he's already killing it.
No, it's going to be cool.
Yeah. So are you going to make it to Tuesday nights? 7 p.m.?
Like I said, I'm about to start 6-10s all the way to February. We're going to try. It's
going to be rough.
It's going to suck. I'm not looking forward to it. So I'm going to try to make a couple. I don't know how many, but.
Well, next podcast, I definitely want to get in with you and our guest a little bit about indoor and then, you know.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff we got planned for the season, and we'll keep venturing down this road. As always, you guys, we hope you enjoy this. And if you have any questions or anything you guys want to pose, feel free to reach out. We're both always here. And like I said earlier, I'm no expert on these things. So if you try and test, or what is the acronym, or not the acronym, the phrase, test but verify. So I do a lot of that myself, and I'm just sharing my experiences with that. So feel free to go out and try, and whatever you do, shoot your bow.
Yeah, that's all.
Anything
it is.
Before just we close out?
No, it's September 24th, Wednesday evening. Good luck, everybody, for the
yes, sir,
rifle opener this weekend. If we were out last weekend in C-Zone for the opener, chase some deer around. That was fun. But anybody else going out for the D-Zones opener this weekend, hammer down, get after it.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. And as we all know, you know, stories and arrows always fly straighter after arrows. Damn it.
Oh, shit. You're right, brother. Stories and arrows always fly straight after arrows.
Stories and arrows always fly straighter after hours. To the next one, buddy. Have a good time this weekend. And we'll talk about, because we're both going, we'll talk after we get back. And we will let you know how it went, hopefully with some fun stories.
All right, buddy. Take care. All right,
buddy. You have a good night.
You too, man. See ya.
See ya.